Good morning, everyone. And so I'm Steve Curiel, chair for today, my first term. So if I mess up, it's not my fault. First time, but I can only use that excuse one time. So I will ask Randy if you want to just flag salute or pledge allegiance.
Sure. Ready? Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic. Which stands, my nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. That's the branch of the culture. Okay, so we do now member roll call.
Rob Claudio.
Here.
Steve Curiel.
Here.
Andrew Fahmy.
Here.
Bill Hewitt. And Randy Weber.
Here.
And we have four.
Thank you.
And any public comments?
No.
So again, thank you everyone for being here. We have a short agenda, but there's a lot of information we're going to cover. So I asked if that would be a good idea, especially for me being new on this space. To get an overview of our one-stop operators programs and anything related to help us make going into this year, understand what's happening and be more informed as far as our roles are concerned. So, I understand we have a lot of staff here. Thank you all for coming out, making the trip wherever you came from. Up there here, are they mostly local here? Or
yes, and Brea. And Brea.
And Brea. So Brea, that's what we're
talking about. Yay, Brea.
So I'll ask, and there's two things I want to curveball. One's a curveball, one you already know. So I guess success story, I think you guys know about that. And what excites you about the work we're doing? Maybe that's
a lot of it.
You all look like
Thank you, Chair. So we're going to divide it up into operations and programs. So we'll start with operations presentation, let's pause for questions, then move to program, and we'll have each staff introduce themselves and answer your question. And the success stories are built into the presentation.
Cool.
So bring up our operations team to introduce yourself, your position, and
So good morning, everyone. So nice to meet you all. I feel like I've been here, I'm with you all, but I've been here for a year and a half with WED, and this is the first time I've been in WED Talk, maybe. So I'm so happy to be here. It's so nice to meet you all. My name is Jocelyn Jasper. I am the Grants Program Manager for the One Stop Operator Program. So I do want to give an overview of the One Stop Operator Program, but I'll first answer what excites me the most about my job. I think I've seen clients come in and hearing these success stories. Working as with the one-stop operator, we do release surveys out to the public and we do receive feedback. A lot of that is positive. Talk to people and do discuss about how we can implement, how they're so thankful, how they're not aware of our centers. They kind of fall into the gym once they're aware of them. So that really excites me to see that, you know, once they get to our center, they're able to access all these resources and find employment. So let me go ahead and get started with the one-stop operating program. I did want to start with a little bit about the service provider. So the service provider is America Works of California. They operate as a current one-stop operator. They recently released an RFP, so they will be our operator for the next 4 years. They were also our operator for the last 4 years as well. They had a total of 12 full-time employees in both the Barlovina and Brea centers, and we have an annual budget of $2 million. They are funded also by WEOA and Adult and Disabled Worker funding programs. As far as what they do and what their responsibilities are, they do provide operational oversight. So they manage the daily operations of the center. They are the facility supervisors. They're essentially the first face you see when you call or when you come into our center, and they support our job seekers and our businesses as well. They also support with technology, making sure the center is full staff, making sure that all of the computers are available, that we have a phone line, that the internet is working, that clients can come in and have an accessible and inclusive environment. They also support and provide a customer-centric approach. So they prioritize the needs of job seekers. They ensure that they provide excellent customer service to every client that comes into a center. They triage every client, see what services they need, and see how they can best connect with their resources. And then they also support with creating an inclusive space for all job seekers, making everybody feel welcome into the space. They also provide basic career skills and training. So they oversee our resource here. We do have computer rooms, both in our Brea and the Unigel location.
They maintain our job boards as well. They're also in our resource group and also on our website. So making sure that all of our employment opportunities are up to date, all our services are up to date. And then they conduct assessment testing for clients, and they also develop workshops to provide basic career skills. So resume writing, mock interviews, how to apply the job and what job search looks like. They also support with partner integration, so in collaboration as well. So they facilitate collaboration by providing bi-monthly meetings where they discuss updates about the center, what programs we have in our centers, and how we can connect clients to resources. They also support with the MOU and IFA implementation. So they execute our one-stop MOU. And then they also oversee our infrastructure funding agreement. They develop sub-licenses with all of our partners and then collect rent for our locations. That's an overview of what the operator does on a high-level basis. Moving on to our next slide. We will discuss the Maritime Workforce Solutions Center stats. So I do want to discuss a little bit the 23-24 set stats that we have. I did want to share this picture. This is our resource room in Brea. This is Kyla. She was previously our resource room attendant. She has now been promoted to a training coordinator to provide workshops and support. But I did want to share this data. I believe this was shared in the full board meeting. I wanted to break it down by our Brea and the Unidad location. As we can see, just on a high level, is that clients are mostly accessing our location, which makes sense. They're comprehensive center. We have EDD there. So we do see mostly clients coming into that center. Clients are walk-ins. So we did have a total of roughly 6,000 interactions for walk-ins. Clients are coming in as opposed to coming in through appointments. And then clients are also for Brea location coming in as first-time visitors. So I think that's really exciting. We love opportunity there to provide clients to resources that we have. For Laguna, it's fairly similar. Clients are coming in as walk-ins. And then we also have clients coming in to act as our research room, which makes sense because our case for our Laguna Niguel location, we have tape testing there as well. And then clients are calling as well. And then the last thing I did want to note is that for Laguna Niguel, clients are coming in on an appointment basis as well.
Question
about
the call, or maybe it's a little bit of calls and appointments. We don't offer any kind of virtual calls for customers. Is it just phone calls?
It's phone calls. Yes, it's phone calls right now, and that's where we do connect them. I know we provide services virtually through like our workshops that are virtual, but as far as like calls, it's calling the actual center.
Okay. Okay.
And moving on to our next slide. I did want to share this slide. I think it's very exciting now that we've been open for a full year. We can actually start comparing apples to apples now. In the past, we had been comparing our workforce solution centers to our Garden Grove location, but now we can compare that we have a full year of data. We can start looking at the first 2 months. So we did open July 5th, 2023. Since then, we've seen a growth between the first 2 months this year compared to last year. Especially now that EDD opened in September 2023, it's brought our data up pretty significantly with more awareness of our centers. But for example, for Brea, we saw a first-time visitor increase by 289%. Another one I wanted to highlight was our walk-ins did increase by 204%. Our appointments increased by 220%. For Laguna, we saw something very similar. Our walk-ins did increase by 220%. First-time visitors did increase, but not as significantly at 51%. So I think it's very exciting. As clients are becoming aware of our center, we do get more traffic coming into our areas. All right, next slide, please. And then I wanted to discuss our workshops. So I think this was also shared at our full board meeting, but I did want to share that we did host a total of 645 workshops. Our most popular workshops are a resume review. There's a lot of requests for resume reviews. Writing a resume, having one of our staff review it. The next one is the Orange County Workforce Solutions Center orientation, which provides an overview of both our locations, what partners are available, and what services clients can access, followed by our mock interview. So having a mock interview on a one-on-one basis with a trained coordinator. We do provide these workshops both in person as well as virtually. So it's a hybrid model. So the training coordinator will provide the option to both. We do have a camera that's accessible, so a client can choose to attend virtually or in person. We do see a trend towards virtual attendances. We have attendances at 459 for virtual versus in-person, which is 269. These workshops are provided
four to five times a day. So it's throughout the entire day that clients can come into that consult shop.
What's the time period?
What's that?
How long are they?
How long are they? They're roughly about an hour.
An hour each.
An hour each, yeah. And it's from typically from 9 to 4 o'clock. All right, and next we'll go ahead and hand it over to Jessica to discuss our 23-24 survey results.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jessica Castro. I work alongside with Jocelyn to oversee the one-stop operations centers. I have been, I think I'm the newest from the team. I have been in this office for about a month and a half. Previously, I was at the Veteran Service Office for about 17 years. I supervise the operations also of the office. So I think what excites me the most is kind of seeing the transition from we refer a veteran into the workforce and then seeing the back end now, right? It's like, what is it that we do now with this team, right? So it's like, what is it that we do for our veterans? What is it that we assist those that have those like challenging, you know, situations or those barriers for employment as well? So with that said, I'm going to go ahead and talk about the survey results. In program year 23-24, we assess the services to the OC Workforce Solutions Centers by inviting feedback through surveys from visitors to the centers, users of our in-depth resources, and both co-located and non-co-located partners. Surveys are distributed via email, but we also provide QR codes in the resource rooms along with the pop-up prompt users so they can go ahead and do a survey after they're done utilizing the computers. Our participant satisfaction rate on all clients who visited the Brea and the Laguna Niguel Solution Centers, we sent a total of 3,245 email surveys. We received 1,124 unduplicated responses. Based on our responses, we received a 97% participant satisfaction rate. Additionally, we surveyed, as I mentioned, our co-located and non-co-located partners to evaluate the effectiveness of our collaboration during our bi-monthly meetings. This surveys created a safe space for sharing areas for improvement and just overall experiences. As a result, we received a 93% from our co-located partners and a 92% from our non-co-located partners. And lastly, we have the career workshop to evaluate the effectiveness of the career workshops, which Jocelyn mentioned a few minutes ago. And to ensure that the material met the expectations of our clients, we send out about 409 email surveys, and we received about 78 unduplicated responses. Based on all responses, we received a 93% satisfaction rate on that as well. So that was pretty much through our Survey Monkey. And as I mentioned, we send those out either on an email on a monthly or bi-monthly basis. And we also have the QR code in our resource rooms for those, you know, young, you know, clients that want to go ahead and just utilize it that way as well. thank you. We also wanted to share a success story. This is one of the many that we received, you know, through the program year 23-24. I'm going to go ahead, it might be a little bit lengthy, but I feel that it's very important to be able to share, you know, what we're doing in the centers. So this is from one of our clients. It says, I've been out of the workforce for 15 years. Recently, due to a change in circumstances, I started to look for work again as a job and a very much needed. A couple of weeks ago, I started to come here looking for help in my job search. I did not expect to get the level of help that I've been receiving from the staff here. When I mentioned that I might need help with my resume, Roger, without hesitation, sat down in front of the computer and started to fix my resume to make it look more outdated and presentable to employers.
Throughout the process of fixing my resume, Roger explained to me that employers are looking for in a resume nowadays. Details that are related to a resume that I would have not known since I've been out of the workforce for so long. Like Roger, everyone else that I've been in contact with here has been so helpful. I did not know the staff here would help me with a mock interview besides other resources. I had a mock interview with Christine, and she was a very good listener. She helped me how to answer some of the most typical questions that an interview will ask, such as, tell me about yourself. Brenda is very friendly, kind, and has the willingness to help. Teresa is also very helpful and gave me some good tips for my job search. I had an interview for a government job 2 days ago. I received an offer. Literally, I would have not gotten this job without the help of the staff here. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. I would like all of you to know that you helped me tremendously. What you all did has helped to change my life for better. For that, I am forever grateful. So we, like I mentioned, there's definitely a few more stories to share, just like this one, but this is a lengthy one, and for time constrictions, we wanted to make sure that we keep it a little bit short. So I am now gonna go ahead and pass it on once again to Jocelyn, so she can go ahead and continue with some of the lots of operations presentation.
Thanks, Jessica. Thank you, Jessica. So I will be sharing a little bit about the AJCC certification process. This was previously known as a hallmark of excellence. The next slide, please. So our AJC certification process, per WEOA, we are required to evaluate and certify all of our AJCCs.
AJCC is now American
Jobs
Centers of California.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, our American Jobs Centers of California. So we're required to ensure that we are in compliance with WEOA regulations, any WEOA statutory regulations that we have and requirements that we have, and also to promote a continuous improvement in our competency centers. There are seven indicators that the state has chosen as indicators of promotion, what a good AJCC looks like, and how we need to improve to meet those goals. So we do have an evaluation panel that conducts these evaluations. We have a three-panel evaluation panel that came out and evaluated seven different locations, and they reviewed the baseline certification matrix and the indicator assessment. So the baseline certification matrix is a checklist. It essentially reviews and ensures that we are meeting WEOA compliance. And then the indicator assessment highlights seven different areas where AJCCs can improve and see if we're meeting these requirements. So those two have already been evaluated in our seven locations. Once they complete their evaluations, they will submit this information over to us, and then we will review it and present this to the full workforce development board by October 30th, and then we will submit it to our regional advisor by November 1st. Once we have all that information, we will work to develop a continuous improvement plan. So the findings that we want that are presented to us, we will use that to develop a continuous improvement plan and submit that by December 31st. And then beginning January 1st, 2025, we'll begin to implement the continuous improvement finding and abide by the findings that the evaluators provided over to us.
Who's up the evaluation panel?
The panel is consist of two county members and the operator.
So for the one-stop operator committee, if any of you would like to do an evaluation at any time, just reach out. So that concludes kind of the operations before we go into the mobile unit. Does the board have any questions for the operations?
No, but I can just tell you from the, you know, this has been a long process for the California Workforce Development Board because they were the ones that mandated this across the state. And initially, they did a lot of training throughout the different regions, and they actually, when they first began the process of how do you properly evaluate a location, they specifically asked for people that were not affiliated with this operation at the center, and they really wanted the private employer, private business to take a look through their eyes, because, you know, some of us may be a little bit more biased because we sit in them and we talk through them. But that's when they began to formulate the whole process of looking at things, and, you know, from a very customer-focused point of view, and not necessarily from this is how we traditionally do business.
And the two county staff that were on the panel were not affiliated with Title I services.
Okay. Is this process, how does the one-stop operator typically respond to when, I mean, I go through accreditation every 6 years or so. This is every three?
Correct.
So is it something for them? Is it high stakes for them? Or is it more collaborative? They feel like this is something to help us.
Yeah, it's collaborative. I mean, there's the basic requirements. So the lower requirements are a checklist of yes or no. And then we do have the 7 indicators. So it's a collaborative effort. It's not necessarily to say, oh, you're doing this wrong. It's more sort of like, how can we improve and become a better AJCC and provide better services to our clients?
Does EDD go through? Do other agencies, partners, go through this?
Well, we are in the center.
Yeah.
So you're getting, you're part of
it. Has to be, right. If you're interested.
Yeah. No, I was saying it's the EDD as a service agency, go through a certification process, or Department of Rehab, or do they all go through some kind of?
So we our evaluation comes from the Department of Labor based on our performance.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah.
So it's not outcomes.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yep.
So on our odd usage for the centers, I know when we saw you, you had mentioned that Ray is more comprehensive than Laguna Niguel. I love Laguna Niguel. Right down to the house, I go visit whenever. Is it also demographics, like the regions that where Ray is? You hear about South Orange County, more affluent. It's not as big a demand because most folks are working. We're also going to live in North South Orange County. Is that kind of where you guys see the discrepancy, or is it a smaller population down there?
I think we see a discrepancy, and this kind of from what I've observed, is that our Bray location is our comprehensive center. So we have EDD there. So we have a lot of clients accessing EDD. We have SSA on our first floor. We have more partners in our center, and it's just a larger center overall. So I think that's why we see more traffic coming up to our comprehensive location.
And only one has to have all the agencies, right? If I recall. So the other one's just more a satellite extension and limited services. Probably doesn't need some services as much.
So we're the bigger driver to a lot of the centers, and we started the planning process to be part of Laguna. But when we got to the point where the owner of the property had to sign off on the EDD sublease language, he did not want to do that.
I know what that's like.
Revisiting to see.
Yeah. So recently I've asked Nancy to go back and see if there's any opportunity for them to go back and review that. Because we, EDD, had an office in Mission Viejo for many years, and we had a good amount of traffic. You know, so I know that their need is there. As soon as we get there, people will find us, you know. And people that are unemployed come from all walks of life, you know, whether they're the affluent or the working class, or, you know, because everybody goes through that. So they all need some resources, and they tend to, you know, look for us out of necessity initially because they have to file for unemployment, but the next steps after that. So we're hoping to make some headway. And that's why, I was looking for, you know, Huntington Beach in that area too, because I know that there's still a good pocket of communities that need us.
Just a good segue, because we cover the north and the south.
The mobile unit
covers all the in-between of the other 32 cities.
One last question. When we collect the numbers for service, do we collect demographic data on this? Do we know, like, gender women, men? Ethnicity.
Our bot screener data doesn't include that. We can probably pull it on CalJobs some different way, but the main interaction data that we receive just collects what clients are coming into our center. I think the most we get is whether they're red or not. That's the information that we do collect. But as far as like demographics, we're not really collecting that until we work with our
users. And it probably would be a little bit, if you start asking too many questions, now you're creating a barrier, so I can see if it's not a good deal.
Would you like demographics pulled?
No, I'm just
okay.
No.
All right, thank you.
Just a quick one. As far as capacity for the centers, is there a goal for what we want to reach? Have we reached 20% of capacity, 50%?
Capacity as far as our partners?
Just in terms of visitation. Like, if we look at visitation, are we on the right track? Are we doing well? Are we barely hitting half the capacity? Or where do we want to go?
I would say we're on track as far as comparing the first 2 months from when we first opened until now. We are increasing by 200%. So
yeah,
I guess we won't know until we have a little bit more data, a little bit more years.
It's probably really tied to what's happening in the workforce.
Sure.
Obviously, if our employment rate goes up, then we're going to see
the economy is a big driver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I would love to see it. It's busy. Like, it gets really busy when we have our business hiring events. It gets really busy at that time. I would say there is traffic overall. There's constantly clients coming in. But I would love to see more people in our resource room, people attending our workshops. So, yeah, there is a goal to see that increase in the future.
So we have the centers, they do bi-weekly hiring events where they bring in like almost mini like hiring events with multiple employers too.
And how many staff are there? Let's see, Brea.
Brea, we have 7 in Brea.
Okay.
And 5 in Laguna.
And it's open.
Just for the operations team, but career teams and the adult program and the youth program are also housed there as well as some counties.
So that was an influx. I mean, is there you never brought up your experience where there's too many people here? Again, it's
no.
It's gonna be
come on.
Yeah. We don't ever. But yeah.
Typically, yeah. You know, if you look at the history of all of our locations throughout the county, we it's been a number of years. We usually the traffic numbers exceeded parking. The traffic, the walking traffic numbers in the centers. But again, different economic times.
Hey, Chair, we'll move on to the mobile unit and then into programs.
So my name is Amanda Cardo. I am in charge of the Workforce Solutions mobile unit. And to go to your question, something that most excites me about the work that I currently do, I haven't been here for that long, here about 5 months now. I also come from the Veterans Service Office, where I was very front-facing with helping a lot of veterans. Now here, I kind of get to see the back end of it, to get to see the scheduling, since I am in charge of that as well, to get to see the case managers go in there and provide services to individuals that come out to our mobile unit. So, just to kind of see the service from an outsider's perspective as far as offering it personally, that's something that kind of makes me happy to see that all of this work that we do within the mobile unit, it's kind of like a one-stop center on wheels, right? So we get to provide those services directly into the cities rather than them coming into our one-stop centers. So our mobile unit travels across the county to serve job seekers, employers, and community members where they live. Inside the mobile unit, you'll find 12 computer workstations, 2 multi-use displays that show hiring events, stuff within our county that is going on at that time, VR headsets, a wheelchair lift, a printer and a copier, high-speed internet, office supplies, 8 tables and chairs, which is our exterior setup for our program information, awning and lights, a power generator, and RV power supply. So on the left, you will see a map. This is the map of obviously the county, and on this map you'll see a few different colors. So in yellow you will see all of the locations that our mobile unit visits monthly. So right now we currently have 19 locations that we visit. In red you will see our affiliate locations where we go and offer services directly into the facilities or locations. And then in blue you will see where our one-stop centers are located. So like I said, we do have 19 locations that we currently visit. Within the past program year, we did assist a little over 1,500 clientele that came either onto the mobile unit or visited to get some more information about what we offer. So some of the things that we do offer is career services, which could be anywhere from resume building to interview techniques with our case managers that are on board. We do have case managers both from the youth program and from the adult and dislocated worker program. We offer tape testing. Our mobile unit driver is certified to provide that tape testing on the mobile unit. So anybody that is within those cities, if they feel the need to go to a location that may be a little closer to where they live, they can go ahead and do that. TAFE stands for the Testing of Adult Basic Education. So that will kind of give you the baseline for where they would like to go with their career and kind of give you a more insight. So that goes to our case managers and kind of goes from there. Yeah. And then we do offer WIOLA enrollment as well. If they have all of the necessary requirements, our case managers are more than equipped to enroll them in the WIOLA program. We offer the virtual career exploration through our VR headsets to kind of give them an insight of maybe certain careers that they haven't experienced before. Through that, they can see what they're interested in, maybe what they're not interested in, and kind of go from there, as well as job referrals from our case managers. And we offer hiring event information and program information.
Any questions about the mobile?
Who gets to drive that RV?
one driver and three backup drivers, including Amanda.
Yes.
And not me. Yeah.
Don't go through a dry increment.
I think so.
I got a question.
Yep.
Testing, I know I get an assessment by grade level, and that's where getting that grade level score matches up with the jobs that are out there. They might be asking for certain levels of education. Is that the idea? Because in the other WIOLA 2 world, we use CASAS, which is another indicator, a reading indicator.
We use that for you.
So I'm wondering if I can see the disadvantage going completely positive. If we had a student came to us for referral and they had their CASAS support, that would be a huge time saver for them.
Focused on the adults, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, these are adults. All of our students are adults.
Okay.
So they all take CASAS. But it's a score like 220 or 190. So it doesn't make sense when you're trying to get a grade level, which I think is why TAFE makes some sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks. Any questions? No, we're good. We're moving on to the Adult Dislocated Worker Programs.
Morning, everybody.
Morning.
Good to see you guys. I've been Rob Brophy, 2015 for the BEP program, working in the UFS, worked a little bit with Steve for the National Dislocated Worker Program. It's nice to meet you, Andrew and Randy. So I'm Anthony Rafiq, and I've worked with a great team. I have Roxana Soto-Dornby at the computer for a presentation with me, and I want to see the Adult Dislocated Worker Program. So I guess I'll start off by saying workforce development is the heart of economic development. Right. We are basically the lifeline of any economy and getting the skills that people need to get into jobs. Right. So the Adult Dislocated Worker Program is a federally funded program. And what we do is get people good jobs and get them the skills so they can have sustainable incomes and they can be economically self-sufficient. You know, Indeed World talks about what a good job is. And they said a good job must have a livable wage, right? That's what we try to get our people. We want to get them benefits, right? They must be comfortable, they must be able to provide for their families. And then we want them to help them build careers. How do we do that? We do that through comprehensive case management. We have people who work with the people in the communities, providing one-on-one support to get into those career jobs, right? Our target populations are people who are on public assistance, low-income people, people who have been laid off or terminated from their jobs. Ideally, people for all programs have high barriers to employment. These are the ones who need that extra little bit of support to survive in this economy. You know, with the world of work changing, right? You have technology that's impacting how work is doing. You have the skills and the jobs that are changing. So we're helping people do that. And the core of those services. So I just mentioned that I was on the veteran program, so I provided that one-on-one support on the ground. What that looks like. That looks like talking with Mr. Jones about what his career path is, helping him plan that career path, then helping him getting his resume ready, giving him mentoring, coaching, connecting him to community resources, right? That's the core of what that work looks like. And then what we do is connect him to employment. Check with Mr. Jones 12 months after if he likes that job, right? If he wants to stay, is it a sustainable career? What are some of his career goals? And we provide that in our local community, in our local one-stop centers, right? We're just talking about where mobile unit goes, where centers in Puna or in Brea. Another essential part of our adult and dislocated worker program is skills development, right? We have to always, one of our jobs is always staying abreast with what are the growing jobs in the economy and what are those skills that are needed. And we use that information to guide people into career pathways, right? So we do that by providing them with skills training, right? We do that by on-the-job training or providing work experience. At the end of the day, what we provide are in-demand skills, right? And comprehensive support. Now, there's with everything that's happening in California, people need an extra supportive services, right? And that involves things like maybe you need something to stay or to get into employment, to stay in employment. And that includes things like paying for rent for a month, paying for utility bill, right? Or transportation costs. These are all rising costs that your people need assistance with. And finally, we're really part of a national network. Workforce development, the success of workforce development is really all the partners. You are all partners in this room with us, right? EDD, adult education, the employers, the educational institutions. We are all partners within a workforce ecosystem that makes this adult and dislocated worker program work. Any questions and an overview of what that looks like? All right. Next slide. So to tell you why I'm so involved and love what I do, for those of you who don't know, I'm from the Caribbean. I'm Guyanese and Inuit. So where I come from, about 60% of the economy is below the poverty line, right? I know what it means to not have. I know what it means for me if I had some of the things that, and I advocate this everywhere, if I had some of the things that we as an adult dislocated work program have, how different me in my work. I'm not saying something. But I say all of that to say that's really where my passion is, right? And I've taken some time to travel through a little bit of the US, maybe not to, but 16 states. And what I've learned is I love Orange County. I always come back home. It's home to 3.2 million people. And we have, what, 3,000 people who are driving jobs. But what's important, and Rob just pointed it out, it's that we're not just serving the people who are unemployed, we're serving the full gamut of everyone who can access our workforce settings and touch some form of service. And I say that to say, you might be in a high performing career, but you can use your settings to maybe just, maybe I want to do a career transition, explore what that job looks like. You may be unemployed and you may need one-on-one support, you talk with our case manager. You may be a youth, right? You can connect with a youth program. So anyone can talk to or can use a service within our one-stop center. Right now, the unemployment rate is just about 4.4% in Ontario. Next slide, please. Workforce characteristics. As workforce professionals, we're always thinking about what are the next jobs for one-stop employers, right? What are you looking for? What are the skills you're looking for? Because we're recognizing now, as you're learning about workforce or you're learning about jobs, like every job needs a master's degree or bachelor's degree. It's more of a skills-based economy now, right? That's the new language of the world of work. So I bring this up to say in that in Orange County, what we're seeing is that the growing industries are healthcare, professional, scientific. We're seeing a lot of jobs now in transportation and warehousing, and even jobs in education and arts and entertainment. And what are the skills that people are looking for? Employers are saying we need more marketing skills, more project management skills, auditing and in the spaces of accounting and merchandising. Next slide, please. We're seeing our top industries. I mean, in healthcare right now, one of the biggest industries right now in our county is healthcare. We have about 20,000 jobs. We're seeing a lot of government jobs spread across manufacturing. And I should point out right now that there are four strategic growth areas for us as a workforce region. Is information technology, healthcare, advanced manufacturing, and tourism and hospitality. And here you can see that a lot of those jobs are within those strategic growth sectors. Next slide, please. Our adult program, so just that we fund, so every year we get funding allocation for our program. Last year we got about 8.4 million in terms of funding for adult and dislocated workers. What is important for in the delivery of programs is that we spend a minimum of 30% in training. And that's getting people the skills, those in-demand skills, and getting them ready for those jobs. Next slide. All right, performance. So how do we measure the outcomes of our programs? The adult and dislocated work program, so the important thing is we talk about skills and we talk about jobs. So performance and measured around those metrics, really. So we're talking about work employment rate at the second quarter, or what that means is after 6 months on the job, are you still on the work? Same thing with 12 months. And then we look at what are the median earnings for all persons in our programs or who have exited our programs. And then the second one is the skills. Do you get a certificate when you put you in training? If you got training, and did you get a skill? One of the things is we want to have a measure of the skills gain every year that you're in training. So we also measure that as part of our outcome. And I'll talk about more about that as we move through the presentation. Next slide, please. All right, so last program year. What we see is that last program year, we served a little over 1,200 people last year. It's been between our adult and dislocated worker program. And to add to the demographics, we've had about 50% male, 50% female, a little bit more on the tail side. But I bring up the age distribution. And I address age distribution because when you look at a person's life cycle, every person has a different need in their life cycle. It's important to understand from a case management perspective what that looks like. So what we're seeing is that we have a large population, 325 and 34, and that's a population that's probably now getting into their careers, looking for stable jobs, looking for a building career, getting their first car. Case management varies for that. That's again, individuals 445 and older. Right, they maybe have they're really more stable. They have more stability for their. They may be looking for rapid employment services. So, this has been what it looks like for us. We're seeing at least 50% of our population over the age of 45. We also have a large population that's been engaged to our programs. Next slide. All right. So, in our comprehensive economic development strategy, Orange County has 13 red zones. And what that means? What that means is in 13 red zones, in these areas, the unemployment rate is 2% higher than the national average, right? And what it also means is that 80% of the per capita income is below the national average. It is important to point this out because in our programs last year, 50% of the population that we serve are from the red zones, right? These are the areas in communities that need that additional support. We've recognized actually, it's about 300,000 people that live within these areas, right? And what we have is at the mobile unit map construction report, we're actually having our mobile unit touch each one of the areas. The two one-stop centers that actually can service all of these areas. And we have strong outreach activities to connect with individuals from this population. The employment barriers. So as I was talking earlier, the goal of our WEOA programs is really to help people with high barriers to employment, but we really need to understand what that looks like. What we're seeing is that almost 50% of the people in our programs are low-income people, right? These are people probably earning below the livable wage in Orange County. We're also seeing a lot of older workers punching out the workforce population. We're seeing people who are long-term unemployed and homeless population who are touched, who are coming to our programs. Next slide.
What was ELL?
Right?
ELL.
English language learners, right? So one of the things, so because we have a large Latino community, right? You're also trying to get them to use our workforce. It's all about the engagement, yeah, getting everyone in to use it. Services provided. All right, so we actually provided one-on-one support to all our participants, 1,200 people. Right, we've issued 70 supportive services, 10 of our participants were in work experiences, right? 155 participants actually got skills training, and we had 380 people that were able to get into jobs. Next slide. Supportive services. So this is where the additional assistance of people needed. People utilize a lot of their funds for transportation assistance, housing assistance, and utilities. Next slide. For work experience, so what we're seeing is, so just to give a quick overview, work experiences where we have sometimes we have an individual who has been out of the workforce system for some time, they're looking to transition into a new career pathway, right? And they don't have that experience. What we can do is we work with employers to get someone the experience they need to transition into a new skill or a new job, I should say. So we've had 70 work experiences at 50 work sites, right? And 10 of our participants were able to benefit from that. Many of the jobs are administrative, food services, and education.
Those numbers represent where people are going. They're getting administrative work experience or food services.
So these are all the opportunities that we have.
That we have.
Yes. So now I'll bring my colleague Roxanne. She'll talk a little bit about the breakdown of our tree.
Can I ask a question? Don't worry, I'm just right up there. When you look at the barriers, do you look at how many of the students have multiple? Because I can imagine a client.
Yes.
Is EL, older adult, low income?
So in this case, one person can have multiple barriers. We didn't capture them by number of persons, we captured by the number of barriers.
But do you look at how many of them have multiple?
Yes.
And then obviously the ones with more barriers have more need, but it looks like you got it all covered with the different services.
Yeah, so what we just did is when we're doing an application as part of the comprehensive support that we provide, is when we're doing that new application, it's a conversation that we have with that person, and they talk about all the various barriers that we have. So that when we're developing your employment plan, we're talking about how we're addressing those barriers, or how those barriers are impacting them getting a job, and how we can support them in overcoming those barriers to getting into employment.
Is that like a standard form, that plan, that you like a document that they get, here's your barriers,
yes.
Here's the plan?
Yes, so we do have, once that plan is developed, it's printed and signed and given to the person so they can follow that plan.
Next time you see it, you're going to get it.
Yeah, well, usually we have an application at the beginning, so that application kind of gets barriers during initial assessment. So after initial assessment, then we have an objective assessment before doing the IEP. So any of the barriers that were not addressed during the application, then the objective assessment is captured. So that's what it is. So then we go one-on-one with individual. We have that checklist. We have that conversation during a comprehensive assessment. And that's when and then something in the future can come up. And that's why we modify the employment plan during that process.
If we can see the IEP, like a template, I would see what that works. So we try to do the same thing for education, same almost exactly as well. So. Really look at steel ideas.
That's what we do this network. Okay.
So now I'm going to go over the training services that we provide for My name is Roxanne, the Development Programs Coordinator for the Adult and Dislocated Workers Program. So for today, I'm going to go over the training services. And so earlier, my fellow co-worker was providing a little overview of the numbers. And so regarding the WIOA participants in training services during the 23-24 fiscal year, a total of 155 participants were served. Our occupational skills program during in WIOA is designed to provide skills in different industries and especially in high demand. The duration of the credentials must be sufficient during the impart of the skills necessary that leads to post-secondary credentials and employability after completing the training program. According to the 23-24 program year, an overview of the training programs by sector. So the first one was professional, scientific, and technical services with 25%. Some of the top certifications were human resources management program, organization, leadership, communications, and project management. So for healthcare was 23%. Some of the top certification programs were certified medical administrative assistant, clinical trials, medical device and drug development, medical billing and coding, phlebotomy, medical billing, pharmacy tech, medical sonographer, and EMT programs. So for IT, it was with a 23%.
It's a few certification programs where full stack software developer, Cisco certified, cybersecurity, CompTIA, Network Plus. And for transportation, we had a high demand for Class A and Class B truck driving. And the other one was commercial pilot certification. For other services were more for personal care, such as massage therapist. For construction, we have a 2%, and some of the PO certification programs were welding inspector, HVAC, construction pre-apprenticeship programs, and general electrician. For finance, we have bookkeeping and accounting with a 2%, and the last one was manufacturing with 1%, which was a non-destructive tester certification.
Randy, if somebody is interested in kind of the welding training kind of pathway, is there a way that we can refer them to?
We do have a program through Sir Weagles College that gets them into the apprenticeship. So, you know, I always hear the stories that kids, I want to go welding. So then they go pay a school that's not affiliated with a national program. So here they're paying $15,000-$20,000 for a welding cert. But once they get out in the real world, they have to be certified again through a state accredited program like ours. So,
do you know if
the best way is we get them into the trades through apprenticeship program at the ironworkers? So it can go one of two ways: the structural welder doing the buildings, or even like if they go into the pipe trades, they, you know, they're welding on say boilers and stuff at hospitals. So there's two different paths for the welder.
You should look at if that certificate, if you wouldn't mind taking a look at that training class.
Yeah,
cool. So
I'm done with my presentation.
Do you have, like, when you, yeah, you're talking to Tana, we have the need, we know where they're hiring. Do you guys struggle in finding enough schools in any area where people are asking, I want more healthcare, or IT, but you're, there's not a lot of choices where you, like, I guess, well,
it's, yeah. So we have an ETPL list, and that ETPL list, the ETPL list provides, like, a some of all the training programs, if not, if they're not there. Usually what education systems will go and try to connect with some people so that way the training programs they have a checklist, but they do have that employment data. They do report any school provider needs to provide that. So if not, then it's just like basically something that will probably be either accepted or rejected, depends on the checklist. So usually that's what happens. And if not, we try to do more like the leverage reporting. So we, if you know, for your services, we try to connect it with that service. That's only if they're not in the ETPL list.
So like big example, you just the well, like they want to get involved in construction was a big one. We have big need, and you have all these folks that want to get into welding and get certified. Cerritos is the only place right now they could go.
No, that's a part of our, so our apprenticeship program, they go into the program 4 years. So once they get out, they get their associate's degree through Cerritos College. But
okay,
it's an application process. They come down to our apprenticeship school. So for structural end of it, it's on Wednesdays from 1 to 3. They apply. If the company's picking up looking for apprentices, they'll pick them up. Usually about the period, they've already been to the point where they get their certification for welding.
It's to your point, Steve, like if we hear of something recently, like childcare licensing, they were looking for and there was limited. So we will go out and outreach and we'll try to make those connections where I think the hard part is getting them on the state ETPL. And
yeah.
So the California Workforce Association recently had a meeting where they were collecting information on what is the challenges for schools and training facilities to get on the ETPL. So once that process is a little bit easier, we'll have more breadth of resources, but it is a challenge.
And do you see any area right now where we don't have enough schools for like nursing, for example? I was here nursing.
Yeah.
They're all impacted and you wait for everything.
Assistance programs, definitely social assistance, child care.
Those will be okay.
Interesting. Okay.
And then our county, right now they cover $10,000 of tuition. So
anybody can benefit from that training services with the L1. And that's it for me. I'm going to hand it over to
it is how much you love about your job.
I started as a career coach a long time ago, and so I love working with people. And then I started as a project manager working for NOCCD. So I did a lot of working together with them and trying to grow the workforce development program. So now I do more back-end. And so I like helping the service provider, whatever it is necessary. So I love doing workforce development. That's why I'm staying in workforce development.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. I'm Bianca Chapman. I'm also a program coordinator working with Anthony Rothschild for the Adult and Disability Development Program. To get answer your question, something that I find exciting about my job, I'm the newest to the team, so I got hired this year as well. And I've always worked in public administration in the town of Riverside. I worked for different programs. And I love helping the public. And so I like seeing and learning about all the new ways that we offer services just to kind of tailor the needs of the public. Even learning about like offering rental assistance, gas money, things like that are really exciting to me that I had no clue those things were something that we offer to the public. So that excites me. So today I'm gonna go over just an overview of the employment data that we're seeing from the program in 2023-2024. We found that we assisted a total of 380 participants through our program to obtain employment. Of those 380 participants, 411, we had assisted a total of 411 placements, meaning that several of the participants we actually helped with multiple placements. That just goes to show how hard our case managers work to find suitable placements for our participants. It also indicates a strong level of engagement and success among those participants. Now, these are some of the top sectors where we found employment for our participants. The top being administrative and clerical, that's gonna be like your office support jobs, administrative assistants, executive assistants. The next would be healthcare and medical. That's going to be, you know, certified nursing assistants, medical assistants, dental technicians, and then we also have customer service and sales, such as sales associates, customer service representatives, retail store associates, technology and IT, of course, that's going to be IT support, systems engineer, business analysts, and then transportation and logistics. So truck drivers, forklift operators are included in that, delivery associates, things like that. As Anthony had highlighted earlier in his presentation, we saw that some of the industries that stood out to us were IT, healthcare, manufacturing, and hospitality. We did see that those industries had the most growth based on our data, and they reflected a significant demand for those skilled workers. We are consistently monitoring this data to understand, the employment trends, because that kind of helps us tailor our programs and how we can address skill gaps in these industries, especially in healthcare and technology. We are able to strengthen the connections with businesses that are in high demand, and that can lead more job opportunities for our participants as well. And we're also able to tailor the guidance that can help participants navigate their career paths effectively with our case managers. The success that we saw this past year is also a reflection of the vital role that our collaboration with local businesses, training providers and community organizations played in creating the majority of these opportunities for participants. So I'm going to hand it back over to Anthony so that you can go over the partnerships that we've worked and collaborated.
Thanks, Ian. To add to my colleagues, what's important is that all the training that we've been providing and the challenges we've been connecting people to are really in the math occupation industry, right? We've heard CS Brain, their focus on project management, the thoughts of nursing certifications, right? So that's where case managers really does that comprehensive case management, really guiding people into those career pathways. Now, as I was talking earlier, it's about partnerships. This business, or I should say this work, is all about partnerships. And to do it, when we look at all the barriers that we have, people are facing, we're just talking about the barriers that our communities have. We're seeing, we've been building partnerships and working with the ODC Shields, right? Working Central Women Shields, and with connecting with Google, really providing services to individuals with who have been incarcerated. We've had services provided at Dustin Shelter and Mercy House Rescue Mission connecting with those individuals who have been homeless. And we've been working recently with My Day Health, providing services for people with disabling conditions. And connecting with SSA now, our services at Brea, looking at family forward, saddleback needs, connecting with people who are low income. I see all of this to say, sorry, but instead of going through, I'm going to say, we're building these partnerships because we're trying to network and get the messaging out there that the way our adult and dislocated worker programs are here to get you into sustainable jobs. Okay, next slide. And one of the things, I guess, this is my success story now. As I mentioned earlier, I work on the VET program when we first started it in-house on the VET program. And it's interesting to see 2-3 years later the success of what this program has become. You may or may not know that serving a veteran community is so difficult, right? Getting into the environment, connecting them, getting them the resources, having them to come in. And to see now, one of the things that adult dislocated worker programs is doing, connecting, we have a veteran program in-house. And we collaborate in providing services to veterans. In the last year, we served 117 veterans in our VOO programs. 26 of those veterans got into jobs at an average wage of $31.80. What we've also recognized is we provided a lot of the jobs that they're getting are in the space of IT, aerospace, healthcare, and accounting jobs. And they've been, and that's ideally the sectors that they've been kind of employed in. We did almost $130,000 in training, which is about 10% of our adult dislocated worker budgets that we actually serve our veterans, right? And we give them about $18,000 in supportive services. Why this is a win? This is a win because we actually are building trust in the veteran community. That's currency for veterans. We now have, in the last 2 years, almost 400 veterans have touched our workforce programs. Considering that we didn't have as much engagement in prior years. It really goes to show the work, not just of us, but all the partners within the system are trying to provide those services, really trying to connect with them. So that's our success story. Next slide. So performance. Overall, in the last program year, we have, for our state performance, I must say we have done pretty well across the board, and in some cases just missed the mark. What is important to recognize here as we're looking at performance is to recognize this as a space where it's difficult to sort populations, right? And it's really the work that our teams are doing. You can see where actually we've served our populations. We've done more than 1,200. The employment rate after the second quarter looks really good, as well as our skills and credentials. So numbers for themselves. Did you have any questions about me? Just have the floor is open.
On this, and I appreciate your statement about these are the population we serve. They got challenges.
Yes.
Placement is tough. We have the same issues. Does it come back to, or do you find that it comes back to this weird? It's not that they're not skilled. It's in the technical side, it's their soft skills.
Yes.
Go up on time, don't use certain language, those type of things.
Yes.
You said that. Just want to make sure I'm aware.
Yeah.
We try to do more in that area. You do all this training and then they lose it, lose a job because party or absence.
Inability to work with the team.
Inability to get along. Yeah. We all know those. That's as a manager, that's the hardest part of managing people
right.
Get along.
And we are recognizing now that employers are really highlighting that soft skills are really more essential skills on
yep.
The job. At least I was reading our Harvard Business Review article says at least 60% of surveyed employers were asking what's of their soft skills in their interviews. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, there's some software now. There's software certifications out there that are like keys or anyways. Have you guys looked at any? Have you guys used anything like to run some of your clients do a test to see this is where you rank soft skill. Here's a score, kind of like Dave.
Yes.
And you need to get this score as per employer. Do you have looked at anything like that?
So we did have ACT workies at one time, but what we recognized is that the engagement on ACT workies is really low.
Okay.
So individuals would have registered on it, but completing it that was the challenge. In that, we're checking with them regularly how are they progressing, and we're seeing the outcomes from it. We now have a tool from Career Edge. It's a Career Edge is one of the tools that currently using it has multiple tools on there that they could use time management and practice those soft skills. Yes.
One last question. Who's the data person as far as workforce? These are the jobs in demand. This is LVN.
Like,
is that still in demand?
Yes.
There's partnerships we have with Orange County RFP.
Okay.
Kind of training program. They worked very diligently to kind of get on the E2 to go.
We're on the E2 go. We don't have LVN, but that's a like Memorial Care wants to have a conversation about starting an LVN program. So I just want to make sure, because I heard for a while it was kind of on the wayside versus more like an LVS, single job, but it's still at the beginning.
The ones who were coming out of the pandemic, a lot of the nurses were burned out. Then it was a space that not many people wanted to get into. But now you're seeing that trend is changing, right? People are coming to get into space, they didn't manage their, you're paying for those jobs, you're really like their, you know, stable jobs. So yeah, it is really one of the wayside.
And then with data is also a collaboration between RUC Labor Market Information Division, the community colleges, Centers for Excellence, and their data. We kind of attack it from all different markets to try to make sure we have like the most current data available separately from, you know, some of the community surveys that the county needs to.
That's all. I'm going to put that so she has the latest.
Yeah. Latest and the greatest. Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you.
I think I just have two more slides for you, Chair. This is information that you had asked for in terms of the top employers in OC. And so we're looking at UCI, Disney, Boeing, Cal State University, Kaiser, Hope, Providence, Edwards Life Science. And so on our board, I'm proud to say we have at least two of those, and we're shooting for more representation for those on your board. Top companies, your kind of postings are. And then on the next slide, we'll look at the participation that we've always engaged in terms of bringing those top employers to our career fairs and hiring events, and the number of opportunities that have come out through those engagements, including candidate referrals, and then the total services. We've developed WEX's work experience at two of those locations, and currently are working on one additional. So I think the board is really connected, and then we have one open seat on the full board, which I'll try to make sure represents your
priorities.
Yeah.
Allied.
So that's security.
Security? Big open board. Prior to that, that slide before, Robert Half.
That's a recruiting firm.
IT. Okay, IT.
They do a lot.
Yeah, they do. So Robert Half International is on the S&P 500. It's a top recruiting firm for mostly accounting and IT. That's where I started my workforce recruiting. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah, I'm like 20, but yeah. For profit. That's it. And that takes us through the labor market. So we are currently on item 8 on your agenda, Chair. Thank you, Monica.
Are there any special initiatives?
Yeah, so for you today, I'm going to have Francis talk about our VR headsets that we do bring into the jails, the probation centers.
Yeah, so we have a service provider who's transfer VR. They have a VR headset for some of you guys who might want to later on. So we've developed a 12-week curriculum where we go into probation sites and the jails with case management. And it starts off with soft skills, like you mentioned, this the priority. But as they move through the curriculum, we also have career exploration that they can do with these headsets. So they can get a feel for what it's like to work in a warehouse or work in an automotive shop or work in a medical environment. Obviously, they're incarcerated individuals who are in a contrived space, and we can't take them into a warehouse. But these headsets, if you do want to try them out, are very immersive. Is there interest in trying them out?
So they're contained, training modules, because you can't, because I know you can't get internet in there, it's very restrictive.
So that was that, yeah, that's a great point. So that's one of the hurdles. And so we worked with our IT department and a military grade, commercial grade, well, military grade Wi-Fi boxes were procured. So it's basically gives you a cell, gives you a Wi-Fi and jail cells, you know, where you
are.
Yeah, so obviously, yeah, they are controlled environments. So that was not school, that was, and we were able to address it. So yeah, we do have a Wi-Fi box that goes with it. But then,
so we're going to set them up, and then after your open discussion and the adjournment, we'll have them available for you for it.
They've got probably close over 200 different modules on there, over 200 different training modules. The training modules can go from like 2 minutes to 30 minutes in length. There are some with some warnings. If you're assessed, it's blood, it'll give you a warning. It's some solid. Some of the ones do have that. They are, when I say they're immersive, they are very immersive. All right. Get somewhere else.
All right.
Thank you. And so we just want to open discussion. I want to thank everyone who presented. And just very important. A lot of information. Well done. I think concise, but still.
Yeah.
In terms of what I'll.
Thank you, Chair. Future meetings, we won't bring the whole team, but again, I just wanted to introduce them to you all and give you kind of the full overview, and then going forward, still a deep dive, but not the
broader.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Well, it's the same thing. I think big thank you to everybody. It looks like evidenced by the big jump year over year. Everybody's doing a great job, so thank you for presenting.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
All right, with that, just adjourn. I did on one.
Oh, so do you motion to close? Adjourn?
I think we have to make a